Listen, I'm going to be real with you. I am a foodie. I consider Thanksgiving to be like my Super Bowl. Okay. I love me some great food. I love indulging. I love doing it with some of my favorite people, which is family and dear friends. There's a lot to celebrate during Thanksgiving and the holiday season. However, there's a lot that you want to avoid as well. Did you know that cooking remains by far the leading cause of U.S. home fires, with nearly half of all home fires involving cooking equipment? That's according to the National Fire Protection Association. According to those statistics, unattended cooking is the leading factor in cooking fires and cooking fire deaths. And more than two-thirds of home cooking fires begin with something as simple as igniting cooking materials like food, fat, and grease. Now, as I mentioned, tomorrow it's like Super Bowl. All right. If you're a football fan, you love Super Bowl. And if you're a food fan, you love Thanksgiving. But you have a very big opportunity to make sure that you and your family, that you're as safe as possible by avoiding one of these cooking fires. And so to help us out with that, we've got Bridgeport Fire Chief back with us, Lance Edwards, to talk all about this. Chief Edwards, happy Thanksgiving and thank you for giving us your time. How are you?
Very good. Happy Thanksgiving and good morning. First, I want to start off, Melissa, just to let you know, I also have Lieutenant Louis Santiago here with me today. Louis is my aide and actually runs our Smoke Alarm program, so I thought it would be beneficial to have someone other than myself to talk about the importance of working smoke alarms in our program, because I don't want to take all the credit because Louis really does all the work.
Well, Lieutenant Santiago, thank you so much for making the time to also come on, and we're going to talk in depth about the smoke alarms that the city of Bridgeport offers and then ask all the questions about smoke alarms to you. Are you cool with that?
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
Fantastic. Well, welcome to WICC, Louis. Appreciate your time. Chief Edwards, I want to talk about cooking fires because tomorrow there's chaos. Let's be honest. There is chaos in the kitchen. You've got more people than you typically probably do in your home while there's a million things going on and a lot of opportunities, unfortunately, for a fire to spark. What are some of the most common things people should be thinking about or avoiding tomorrow during all the chaos that Thanksgiving can bring?
Well, we could start off with trying not to multitask. That is the number one reason that creates these issues. People are trying to watch television, consume alcohol, and cook either in the kitchen and have a deep fryer going outside of the home. So trying to juggle all of these things, and unfortunately, many people decide to do this without having a working smoke alarm in a home. So it's a recipe for disaster. So I would say first, try not to multitask. Ask for help. Ask for assistance. Get some of the other family members to help you so you're not dealing with four or five different issues going on at the same time, because it's very, very difficult, as we know.
I call that don't be a hero in our house, which is when people are willing to offer to help you and you have helping hands, but you're like, no, I'm the hero here. I'm going to make it all happen and you're all going to be super impressed with me. Like, trust me, you're hosting it, all right? The fact that you're doing it, you're already a hero. Thank you for allowing us to come to your house and like totally bombard you with our lives. So don't take that approach of like, I'm going to be the hero here. I don't need any help. I don't want to bother anyone. Don't be like that, okay? Take the help that you can get. But also, it's really important, Chief Edwards, that people are aware if kids or animals are in the house, correct?
Absolutely. Especially if you're cooking on the stovetop, you want to make sure that you have all the handles from the pots turned away from the front of the stove, and make sure like your stove mitts and pot holders are nowhere near an open flame. Anything flammable. You don't want anything like in terms of clothing to drape over an open flame, because that's certainly going to create an issue as well.
And my ladies out there, even my guys who have longer hair, make sure you tie your hair back, because, man, I have met people, Chief Edwards, no joke, that have had their hair on fire because they're cooking and they've got this long, beautiful, luscious hair. But, man, it catches fire real, real fast. I'm telling you. So make sure you tie it back. Oof. Yeah. Oof. Sounds like a nightmare. Chief Edwards is here from the city of Bridgeport, and we're talking about fire safety, and cooking, unfortunately, continues to be the leading cause of U.S. home fires, and tomorrow is the big shebang where there's going to be a lot of cooking elements going on. What about those deep fryers? You mentioned that before. People who deep fry their turkeys, what should they be thinking about?
Yeah, Melissa, I'll let Louis talk about this, Lieutenant Santiago.
All right, you're on the spot there, Lieutenant Santiago. What do you say about deep fryers?
Well, if you're going to get a deep fryer, purchase one, from a manufacturer. Don't just use your own pot. You can go like Bass Pro or Amazon, and they sell, you know, certified turkey frying kits. You have a propane tank, a long line, and a burner, and both of those have to be away from the structure. There's about 4,500 structure fires annually doing the turkey frying, and 2,000 of them occur on Thanksgiving Day. And you're never to put a frozen turkey or a wet turkey into the grease because it would cause an explosion. Basically, other than that, it's a great tasting turkey. It cooks turkey much quicker, but we have 5 deaths annually due to turkey frying, 60 injuries, and it causes approximately $15 million in property damage due to improperly frying turkeys.
Ooh, Lieutenant Santiago, it must drive you nuts when people do the deep frying in their garage, because I've seen that.
And you want to follow instructions, follow the manufacturer instructions for the turkey frying kit.
Okay. Yeah, really important stuff.
Level ground and away from the structure.
Because you see those videos, right, on YouTube where people will show how to deep fry a turkey. And I'm like, you're in a garage, y'all. Could you at least not give me an anxiety attack? I mean, come on now. Oh, man, it's such a good point. I mean, but that's something that even Chief Edwards, you and I have talked about on the show, like with a grill or if you're doing it on your deck, to get it away from your house. Don't do it right next to the house.
Exactly, because people want all the comforts of life, and that's the problem. And every now and then you need to be comfortable being uncomfortable. So if you want to be able to fry a turkey or cook on a grill, it needs to be away from anything that's combustible. You can't do it inside of your garage, especially using propane.
Right. Yeah. Well, I love how it's like we want the comforts of life, but if it means that your house burns down, you've just lost every comfort you just spent all your money on. So that was not smart. Yeah. Not smart. I know it's cold out there. Trust me. I get it. I know we don't want to stand out in the rain or the cold or anything like that. But if it means keeping your house intact, I'm pretty sure you're gonna do that. You're going to walk a few feet away from your house to do that deep frying. Yeah. There's going to be a whole lot of cooking going on, especially if you are the one hosting Thanksgiving. And we want to talk about cooking fires. Unfortunately, it continues to be the leading cause of U.S. home fires, with nearly half of all home fires involving cooking equipment. But we also know that fires begin a lot of times, more than two-thirds of them, by just igniting cooking materials like food, fat, and grease. And one of the things that is so important to have nearby and throughout the home our smoke detectors. We talk about this a lot on the show. We have with us from the Bridgeport Fire Department, Chief Lance Edwards, as well as Lieutenant Louis Santiago, to talk about this. And really quickly, Chief Edwards, I forgot to mention the importance of having a fire extinguisher in the home. I mean, that should be something that's in everybody's kitchen, right?
Absolutely. In this day and age, there's absolutely no reason, being that they're readily accessible, like at Home Depot, Walmart, and they're very small and inexpensive at this time. So, but you also need to call 911. I certainly don't want people to think that they'll be able to handle an incident that occurs in a kitchen while cooking, because unfortunately, most people aren't trained. They're very easy to utilize and use. But you still want to make sure that you get professionals in it and follow that up with a call to 911.
Besides obviously using a fire extinguisher, if a fire is starting in your oven, for example, because that does happen, what do you suggest somebody does? Do they just shut the door? What do you do?
I'll let the Lieutenant Santiago answer that.
Yeah, just shut the power down, in the oven. And I would say, leave the kitchen, make sure all the pets and your children are with you, and then call 911. And we will be there within 4 minutes, and then we can rectify the issue.
Okay. Same thing with the stove. If something boils over, because that does happen on the stove, and it starts to spark a flame, what do you do in that instance? Obviously shut everything off, but same thing, just pick up and run?
Yeah, I mean, if something is boiling, leave it covered, first of all. Don't try to uncover it. And then, just literally leave and call 911, because, these fires can extend quickly to the cabinets or the above the stove. So you don't want to mess around. Plus, there'll be a smoke condition. So you'd like to get out ASAP.
Yeah, certainly. And you know, but this goes back to being alert and kind of like what Chief Edwards was saying before, which is not to get distracted too many times. In fact, according to national statistics, unattended cooking is the leading factor in cooking fires and cooking deaths, cooking fire deaths, I should say. So people just, you know, leaving it, setting it and forgetting it and walking out of the kitchen or being like, oh, you know, I really got to run and go grab this. I forgot. Let me just leave it on low and we'll go. Like, don't ever do that. I mean, right? Just shut it off. Just shut everything off and just pick it back up once you get back.
Yeah, we actually have people who sometimes cook and forget they were cooking and leave the home.
Mm-hmm.
And then
good grief,
there's a structure fire.
And I get it. Listen, we're not perfect, okay? I would be lying to you if I said that we have not forgotten to shut a burner off, for example, once we take the pasta off and we drain it and we walk away and we eat our dinner. And I'm like, oh, my God, did anyone ever shut the burner off? So I get it. We're human. It happens. But these are things that you could avoid if you're just, again, most of the time it's because you're distracted. You're answering a kid. You're watching TV. You're having a conversation with people. There's just chaos in your home. It happens. We're human. We're flawed. But that's why we have these conversations. And again, we've got Chief Edwards here and Lieutenant Santiago from the Bridgeport Fire Department to talk about this. Let's talk smoke detectors, because I know Bridgeport is one of the municipalities that will offer and install smoke detectors all throughout the year. Where should those detectors be?
Okay, so generally we have a layout for detectors. So like if it's let's just say a single story home, you're going to put one, you know, in the foyer, in the entrance, dining room. You will not place one in the kitchen because, you know, with cooking, like you said, that would be going off all the time. And then you'd put one in the common hallway outside of the bedrooms, and we even put them in each bedroom. And we also put it at the top of the stairs of the cellar if they have a cellar.
Okay. And what if you don't know how to install?
Well, we have a program we've been doing since 2005. We've installed about 70,000 smoke detectors. And if you're a Bridgeport resident, I can give you a number. And they can call, and basically we will have send a ladder company out to your home. We'll choose the time in the calendar and the date, and we will install them for you. They have a 10-year lithium battery. There's no need to change the batteries. You know, when we change the time, after 10 years, you can dispose of them. And if we still have the program, which we hope to do so, we'll re-put them in for you.
Okay. And another thing, too, I know when the clocks changed that we had on the American Red Cross, and they always say that's a great time to check your smoke detectors. But let's say we forgot to do that. What should people do to make sure that they are functioning ahead of Thanksgiving?
Well, there's a test button on them. So you hold the button down and they're going to have an audible sound. If there is no sound, then, you know, it could mean that the batteries are dead or they're malfunctioning. And if they're malfunctioning, as I said, we can do that for you. That's the program that we have, and we can install them for you.
If people don't live in Bridgeport, though, and they're listening and they want to make sure that they do it correctly, would you say that the instructions on the smoke detector, they're pretty easy to follow?
Yeah. You know, you're going to put them in a place. You can mount them on the ceiling or above a door. And, they have the instructions that's what you would do. And like same thing. And like you said, you can get them from Lowe's, Home Depot, and they even have combination ones that now speak to you. So it'll tell you that there's a CO call or a smoke detector call.
Well, that's pretty nifty. I love that. Very, very cool. Lieutenant Louis Santiago and Chief Lance Edwards, I want to thank you both for making the time to come on ahead of Thanksgiving. And certainly these are really important tips to remember even throughout the holiday season, because the cooking is just beginning. It's not just for Thanksgiving. So I appreciate this. And we're going to keep this audio and remind folks of those tips on our podcast and throughout the December month as well. Thank you so much.
Would you like the phone number for the program?
Oh, God, of course. Please. I didn't ask that. You're right. Yes, please.
All right. But to answer your other question, if it's for another municipality, have them call the local fire marshal for their particular municipality in reference to the smoke detectors, like if it's a neighboring town. But in reference to Bridgeport, if you're a city resident, you can call 203-335-8835, and I will be answering the call and trying to schedule the appointments for everyone.
Well, we appreciate you doing that, Lieutenant Santiago, and I want to thank you and Chief Edwards again for making the time to come on the show, and I wish you both a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Same, Melissa. Enjoy your holiday.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Chief. And we'll talk again, I'm sure, after the holiday. Again, we had Chief Edwards here and Lieutenant Santiago with the Bridgeport Fire Department on WICC. Of course, we've got the Thanksgiving holiday tomorrow, and we head into the holiday season after that. And so we want to talk about holiday nutrition, and who better to chat with than our registered dietitian nutritionist, Melissa Keeney, who is back from Hartford HealthCare's St. Vincent's Medical Center. Melissa, welcome back and happy Thanksgiving. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Happy Thanksgiving. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much. And, you know, these are tips that not only could be helpful for tomorrow's meal, but really throughout the rest of the holiday season, which goes on really until like New Year's Day. So we want to, you know, keep the tips not just for Thanksgiving, but like I said, throughout the next few weeks. Let's start with preparing for the big meal tomorrow, though, and during the meal. Any holiday tips for people?
So my number one tip is eat before you go to your Thanksgiving lunch or Thanksgiving dinner. Don't save all your calories until later in the day, because if you wait, you're going to get there and be so hungry that you'll probably wind up overeating and then maybe not enjoying your food so much. So try to eat a balanced meal or even another snack before you go to your Thanksgiving dinner or to your holiday meal, whatever's coming up. And that including carbohydrates, fat, protein, and some fiber. My go-tos are oatmeal with peanut butter and a piece of fruit, or you could do some Greek yogurt with almonds, maybe some type of bar, just a little something so that you don't get to your meal so hungry.
You know, Melissa, I know what you're talking about, but most people listening to the radio are going to turn it up and go, did I hear her correctly? She wants us to eat before we sit down with all this food. That sounds crazy, right? Because people are up at 4 a.m. getting that turkey ready and all the side dishes and everything. Explain for people who may not even understand, you know, not just enjoying it and digesting correctly, but correct that your metabolism needs to get moving, you know, before you sit down to that meal, right? I mean, as far as health is concerned, it actually is better for your body if you get it going hours before that big Thanksgiving meal, correct?
Yeah, and that really goes for your Thanksgiving meal, your holiday meal, or any day. You know, when we eat earlier in the morning, within maybe half an hour to an hour of waking up, then you're getting your metabolism going. Your metabolism slows down overnight. So if you're not eating until later in the day, your metabolism doesn't start. So really starting up your metabolism. And then, like I said, really, you know, fueling so that you get to your meal, not starving, hungry enough so that you want to eat, of course, but so that you can really enjoy the Thanksgiving meal as well.
And again, Melissa Keeney is here. She is a registered dietitian and nutritionist from Hartford HealthCare St. Vincent's Medical Center. We have Melissa on whenever we need some good tips. And this is another one, simple recipe switches. What do you suggest for people, Melissa?
Yeah, so I would caution changing up things too much when you're baking, right? So baking has to be more exact. But when you're cooking, you can really experiment with more, like using less cream, less cheese, less sugar. And this should really be a balance, right? So maybe you don't want to make the food so diety and so inedible that you're not going to eat it, right?
Right. You need to strike a balance there.
Yes, a balance. And, you know, it's really, are you going to enjoy the real thing more? And so then you'll eat less of it and it will satisfy you, right? So figuring out that balance. But, you know, trying lower fat dairy, those are some places that you can make some simple swaps.
That's a really interesting point. Now, here's one that I wasn't sure about, and I can't wait for you to dive into this. Incorporating unique and unusual vegetables to your holiday meal. Like what? Which vegetables are you talking about?
I love this one. So when I'm speaking with patients, something that I like to focus on is what can you add, right? Like you think when you come to see a dietitian, we're just trying to take things away from you, but we really just want to add to your plate, add nutrition. So vegetables are a great place where we can add some nutrition. This time of year is great for squash. You can add all different kinds of squash. My personal favorite is delicata because you don't even have to cut the skin off. The skin gets soft enough when you roast it. You can keep the skin on. Any root vegetables, you can do parsnips. They have brightly colored carrots. One of my other personal favorites is roasted fennel. And those are so easy. You can cut them up, put them on a pan with some tin foil so that way it's easy cleanup. Use some olive oil, pepper, some herbs. They could be dried or fresh. And that's an easy side dish that you can add to your meal.
Interesting. And is that something where if you go to get those vegetables, like if you're like, oh, I don't know what to do with this, you would just look it up online, Melissa, to find some good recipes to incorporate it?
Yeah, I would say in general, most of them can be cut up and just roasted. A lot of times now in the supermarket, they're already cut up for you. So it makes it a lot easier. It might be worth it, you know, spend a couple extra dollars, but it might be worth it so that it's all cut up already for you. Another one of my favorites is roasted kale. You can buy kale in a bag that's already cut up for you and washed and everything. So you could just put that on a pan and roast it. So really easy.
I love kale. Yeah, that's a great idea. Melissa Keeney is here, registered dietitian, nutritionist for Hartford Healthcare St. Vincent's Medical Center. How do you build a balanced plate for the holidays? Because you hear about the food pyramid and everything. What should our plates look like?
Yeah, so I would say the most important thing is when you're going into the holidays, I mean, for the holidays and every day, it's not going to be perfect, right? But we try to at least build a healthy plate. That includes an easy one is including a third of your plate with a carbohydrate, a third of your plate with those vegetables, and then a third of your plate with protein. So that's a really easy way to build a balanced plate.
And I love this, getting rid of the diet mentality, because boy, do we count our calories all throughout the year, and especially even during the holiday season. And that's really not actually, I would think, healthy for people.
No, when we're talking about, you know, getting rid of that diet mentality, I don't think it's so easy, right? We can't just do that every day. And that's where I would really suggest meeting with a dietitian to help you work through some of those things. But when we're talking about dieting, we can really look at it like a pendulum.
Yeah.
Restriction on one side and then binging on one side. And for most people, where we really find that balance is in the middle, right? So an easy way to get rid of that diet mentality, well, it's not necessarily easy, but one way that we can work on getting rid of that diet mentality is being more mindful when we eat. So really being present for the meal. And it can really be just picking one of these things, but taking a few deep breaths before you sit down to have your meal, really being thinking about where your food is coming from. I really like the SSS model. So that's sit, savor, and eat slowly. So even just picking one of those things to focus on is a good start.
I like that. And
yeah. And then another tip that you can use, I call it taking a half time. So you have your plate and you just split it in half. Like you can use your fork just to split your food in half. And when you reach that halfway point, just put your fork down, take a breath, focus on if you're enjoying the food, if you're hungry, if you're full, how you feel.
I love that. That's a really great idea. Even to just, you know, one thing that we are not great at, especially in the colder months, Melissa, is staying hydrated. And something I learned a long time ago from one of my trainers was the idea that a lot of times your hunger sometimes can just be a trigger in your body saying, I'm thirsty, like I'm dehydrated. And so even using your halftime to take down a glass of water.
I love that.
Right?
Yeah,
you know,
great.
Like, you know, because, well, you know, we like to have some entertainment during the halftime show. So maybe you take a break and you take down a glass of water during the halftime break and you see how you feel after that. Because you'd be surprised how many times you're like, oh, man, I'm actually full. I don't need this.
Yeah. And, you know, people tend to be drinking a little bit more. So that's a great time to make sure that you're drinking water or seltzer or something like that.
Good point. And this one is a really important one, too. What do you do with the holiday leftovers?
So it's food safety wise, leftovers last about 3 to 4 days. So keep that in mind. But I mean, I think it's really a great time to get creative. So you can use those vegetables, make it into a frittata, using all of that turkey to make turkey soup or a sandwich. You can do really get creative with any of the leftovers that you have. My ideas are turkey. You can use some brie, some cranberry or fig preserves to make a sandwich. You can make a quiche. You can even add that turkey to a salad.
That's a really good idea.
Just a great way to be creative.
Yeah. It's a great opportunity because you did all that work. So now don't let it go to waste and don't just reheat it. There are ways that you can now make new recipes with it, which is a really great point. And Melissa, if people want to reach out to you, they have any questions about anything throughout the holiday season, is there a good way to contact you or find out more information?
Yeah, so our website is stvincents.org, or you can find me. I have a Facebook page. If you search Melissa Keeney, Registered Dietitian, that's a great way to reach me.
All right. And again, Keeney is K-E-E-N-E-Y. And Melissa, I want to thank you so much for all of these tips ahead of Thanksgiving and the holiday season. And I hope you have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Registered Dietitian, Nutritionist Melissa Keeney with Hartford HealthCare, St. Vincent's Medical Center, right here on WICC.
Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio. Now on Melissa in the Morning.
On WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Earlier this week, we shared in the news that Senator Richard Blumenthal praised IBM here in Connecticut for pulling all advertising from X, formerly known as Twitter. IBM announced the move because of concerns that its ads had appeared next to pro-Nazi posts. So I wanted to get Dan Onofrio's business perspective on this. Good morning, Dan. What do you think about businesses, even here in Connecticut, pulling their advertisement on platforms like X because of what's going on, the turmoil politically and even religiously right now across the country following what's gone on between Israel and Hamas?
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, you know, I think it's appropriate. You know, as businesses look to figure out what platforms and mediums to spend their valuable marketing dollars, right? You know, they want to be aligned with platforms and channels and organizations that align with their corporate goals. And, you know, in this time where we're in, it's so unusual where there's just so much hate and division and, you know, you wonder sometimes like a platform like X, you know, and some of the comments that Elon Musk makes or any of these celebrity type folks, you wonder if they do it just to get the visibility, right, the traffic to their sites because people are curious, you know, on their phones and mobile devices, you know, and that ultimately increases the amount of views. And then they can go back to their advertisers and marketers and say, hey, look, you know, how many people come to our site? So you kind of wonder how much of that is played into this whole thing, but it's appropriate. You know, hey, you know, if your company is advertising on a particular platform, whether it's X or Facebook or whatever, and there happens to be, you know, something that just does not align with your corporate goals, you know, why would you support that, you know, and spend your money in places that add more value and that align with what your corporation, you know, goals are across the country and locally too. So, I appreciate organizations that take a stand, you know, and you know, look at things critically like that because it's important. You know, people do, whether it's true or not, you know, they do kind of align them, you know, with businesses and organizations that
sure.
stand for things that they believe in.
So it's interesting when you say you approve of businesses that take a stand. When you say that, you mean making the move like, hey, this might not drive a lot of traffic to our website, for example, but you know what? It's a bad look for us. So that's what you mean by take a stand. What about, though, businesses speaking out on social media? Like, what do you think about that? Because we've talked about businesses putting signs up or being very vocal about, for example, their political views about things. What do you think about them doing it on social media? Good look for businesses or not so much?
Yeah, you know, I think it depends on the scenario. I think it's a very big, you know, there's a gray area there where, you know, what is too much? You know, employees, everyone's different. Everyone has their own viewpoints. And when you get an organization that you happen to work for or not, and, you know, they come out very vocally on a particular political issue or whatever it may be, you know, there's always two sides to every conversation. And, you know, I think there's a tactful way to do it, you know, where you can – you know, have good conversation and good, you know, good debate. But, you know, oftentimes you see that people just, they go right away to this hate, you know, and it's okay to have differing views on certain topics. And but let's be respectful at the same time and be respectful of the people that we're, you know, employing too, you know. You know, I don't think people, especially the next generation, they don't like going into work where there's an environment where there's hostility or hatred or things of that nature. When you bring that into the workplace, especially if, you know, you're a leader of that organization, you know, it's not good for your business. It just isn't. So I think there's a gray area there. I think there's a balance where you can be a good corporate, civic-minded organization and at the same time, you know, stand for your values. You know, I think there's a balance there. And You know, I'm not a marketing expert by any means, but yeah, there's ways to do it. You know, they have professionals that help organizations navigate those waters.
Yeah, and again, we have Dan D'Onofrio here, the president of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, and I love to get his business expertise and perspective on some of these big stories. And we reported earlier this week that IBM decided to take away its advertising, get it off of X, which is formerly known as Twitter, get it off the social media site because they had concerns that their ads were appearing next to pro-Nazi posts. And so I wanted to get Dan's take on this. You know, what's interesting, Dan, you kind of mentioned this earlier, the idea of sometimes people will post on sites like X or on Facebook or wherever because they want you to click further. They want to get that traffic to their website. They want you to follow their social media sites. They want you to follow them. And even if it means you're mad at them, you can't stand them, a lot of times it still means you've clicked on them because you're intrigued or you're enraged or whatever it is. What do you think in this regard, though, for businesses who have the mentality of any news is good news or bad news is still good for us? Because, again, it brings people to our site. In this regard, though, do you agree with that? Any news is good news? Anybody who clicks on our site, even if it means they want to burn our buildings down, that's still good for business?
Oh, I'll let you know you're hitting on a nerve.
Am I? I don't mean to, but it's true. Look, because I, you know, it's interesting. Like I work in the news industry. Obviously, we all know this. But it's funny because there will sometimes be instances where bad news happens, and I think to myself, man, I feel bad for this person, like a politician, or I feel bad for this business because yikes, that's awful. But 9 times out of 10, Dan, I am told, yeah, but even bad news is great news for them because now you've got people paying attention to them and now it's giving them a platform to speak up. But in this regard, when you've got people clicking on your site because they can't stand you or what you stand for, or they want to bombard you with emails, or they could come threaten your storefront, whatever. What do you think about that? Like in this scenario, is it still a good idea? Is bad news still good for a company, like to post advertising on X? Is that a good idea right now?
Yeah, you know, I think this is, I'm speaking just from my own personal perspective.
Yeah.
And, you know, many years ago, I had a colleague that worked in my corporate life that was a marketing expert, and you know, all these social media platforms were popping up. And I asked him, I said, gosh, you know, how do you stay on top of all these platforms and engage? And he said something to me that I take with me today, and this is what I share with everyone else. And it's kind of the concept of, look, if you don't like it, turn the channel or shut it off or go someplace else. I do believe in the fact that, you know, we live in a country where there's freedom of speech, and that's a beautiful thing, you know, and everyone has their own perspective. But oftentimes, you know, I think it's exaggerated, and I think we encourage a lot of the exaggeration. And what Mark had told me at that time, he said, look, you know, go to the places and the sources that you find value in and stick with those. You know, you can't do it all. And I kind of share that now because, you know, no matter where you go, you know, you see things and hear things that aren't necessarily true. They're exaggerated or you may not believe in. You know what? Just turn it off. Just don't go there anymore. You know, that's why I support the fact that like an IBM and I think Disney, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Disney was one that did it. Yeah. Yep. A couple of big. Yes, you're right.
You know, so I respect them from that fact to say, look, you know, this does not align with who I am as an organization or who I am individually. So you just don't play there, you know, and you can let the other people that, you know, whatever, find value in those things. You know, they can continue to go and do those things. But I think if you stand and you have good, solid core values as an organization, you know, you're going to do the right thing for your organization. You know, so from a marketing perspective, you know, everybody say, yeah, you know, good, you know, bad news is good news, you know, but I don't align with that. I think, you know, look, yeah, you do the things that align with your organization and you do the things as an individual, as a consumer of content. You know, go to places where you get value out of. And if you get value out of those things, God bless you. But, you know, for me, this is where I can go on and on. I tell my kids this all the time. And, you know, look, don't believe everything you hear. Don't believe everything you see. You know, really understand and do your own research. You know, we just finished this last election cycle, Melissa. And, you know, you hear half-truths. And, you know, I'm pretty active in my local community. And people on social media post these things are just false. They're just wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's true. because it's easy just to consume what you see.
Yeah,
because you click a button and it's there. And guess what? It's not always right.
Mm-hmm.
So be responsible and do your own due diligence and really understand the facts and the issues.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Dan Onofrio, I want to thank you so much for giving us your business perspective. I really value it, and I know our listeners do too. You and your family have a fantastic Thanksgiving, and we'll talk after the break.
Excellent. Well, so you as well. Take care.
All right. Dan Onofrio of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council here on WACC.
It's time to get out and explore.
Melissa in the Morning brings you science you may not know on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Apparently, the Connecticut River had some real issues clogged by newly discovered invasive plants. We're going to talk about that right now with David Mestre. Get the scoop from him. David, hello. Happy Thanksgiving. How are you?
Oh, how are you? Yes. Well, we've got a new plant to worry about in on the Connecticut River, and it is a doozy of an invasive species.
Yes, so, and for you kiddos listening this morning, we're not talking about the broccoli you're going to see on your Thanksgiving table. No, we're talking about the hydrilla plant. What is that?
Yeah, so hydrilla plant actually has a pretty interesting history.
Mm.
And so this particular plant that's invading the Connecticut River has characteristics that are like hydrilla, but it's absolutely genetically distinct. So the hydrilla plant actually comes from Asia. We think it actually may be from Sri Lanka, India, but it found its way to the United States by way of the aquarium industry. And so it turns out that, you know, aquariums have these little, sometimes they put plants in the aquarium for their fish. And unfortunately, this was brought back around the 1950s. Unfortunately, people, as they started dumping out the water of their aquariums, they ended up dumping this into waterways around the United States. And so the worst hit was Florida. So there isn't a spot in Florida where you won't find this invasive hydrilla species. It's a waterborne plant, obviously, because it was used in the aquariums. And when people dumped them into the water of the Florida, swamps and areas, they loved it. And
they grew
in the water. They spread and they just clog everything. And so,
oh my gosh! Why? What are they?
Yeah, no, they're just it's literally like a plant that it roots under the water. It has a long stem, and it has these little leaves that kind of look like serrated leaves, and they actually have like little teeth on them too, so they feel rough if you were to try to pick them up. And they just grow in these huge mats. And so if you try to row through it with your oar
is going to get stuck.
Your boat's going to get stopped. It's really a mess. But hydrilla has been found in Connecticut too, because they kind of spread all over the place. We have them in California. We even have them in Louisiana. So hydrilla, we knew about. We knew what a problem this plant was.
But did we know it would make its way to Connecticut?
Yeah, so it has found its way to Connecticut, and we knew that hydrilla, this particular plant, was in Connecticut. What we didn't expect was this completely new strain of hydrilla, that this new strain is only found in Connecticut. In fact, it's the only place in the entire world that this new strain of hydrilla has been found.
How is that possible?
That's a really good question. We don't know. It's a really good question. And so it was only found recently. So what happened was that around, we think around 2016, it might have been here earlier, but this new hydrilla strain might have been here earlier, but we don't know. But it was first detected in 2016 by actually amateurs. These were volunteers, and they did what's called a bioblitz. And what a bioblitz is they pick a part of the river or a part of an ecosystem, a park or something, and what they do is they just record every living thing that's there, insects, animals, birds, plants, and they just record everything. And then they watch that. They just take this list and say, okay, these are all the things that we found here. And then the BioBlitz found this new plant, and they brought it to DEP. They brought it to all these other biologists, and they looked at it and says, this is not a plant we've ever seen before. This plant is completely new.
Hmm.
this was a real kind of a real mystery. And then when this plant started to really grow, because it turned out to be really robust, I mean, this is a really tough plant, and it really spreads, and it really clogs up things. Then it started to become a real problem. They actually did a DNA analysis of it, which was kind of interesting. And, you know, like a 23andMe for this new hydrilla plant. Yeah, it's really wild. So they compared it to the database of every known plant in the world.
And who are its ancestors?
Well, it doesn't have any. It's not related. It's got some relations, but it is not like any other plant.
We don't know its mother and father. We don't know.
So that's a good question. So it has characteristics that look like a hydrilla.
Okay.
And so it has the stem. It's got the kind of sawtooth leaves. But while hydrilla has these little bunches of five leaves that make it look like a star-shaped pattern of leaves.
Yeah.
This dude has like 11 of them. So it's got way more leaves.
Wow.
And then the official hydrilla plant actually has like a little potato kind of bud. It looks like a little tiny mini potato. Hmm. And that's how it spreads. Part of it spreads that way. It spreads with little spuds, and also spreads with these little potatoes. The potatoes are nasty because when they're underground, you can rip the plant out, but the potato stays. And
it's
then
like
that
a tick. Where
yeah,
you can't,
yeah,
if, like you don't, if you don't get the head, then it's
yeah,
like, that's awful.
Yeah. So this hydrilla plant, this new strain, doesn't have that.
Oh, okay.
But if you try to chop it up, any of those little tiny pieces, even small microscopic ones, they end up becoming a new plant.
That's diabolical. It reminds
me
of,
this is,
you ever seen like Wreck-It Ralph, where in the movie that like the whatever the cybugs get underground and then they multiply and then they totally consume Candy Rush? Oh my gosh, I'm sorry, I'm going into
is totally like that. Yes,
that's
exactly.
Diabolical.
And now we did find some close matches.
Okay.
To some plants, but they're like all over the map, like Asia, of course, because we think it's kind of like a hydrilla.
Sure.
But it also found matches to plants in Latvia. We don't know why. And Ireland. I don't know. You
what
know?
In
so,
the world?
I know.
Who did this? All right? Who did this?
This is like a monster. This is like you know, like we took parts of all these different other types of plants and just kind of mushed them all together. And
cheese and crackers.
And we have this Frankenstein plant that we can't control. Now, what's really interesting is its range. So it doesn't like salt water. And so when it gets down close to like Lyme, Connecticut, it kind of stops there because I guess salt water is not something
that's its kryptonite. It doesn't want it. Okay.
Yeah. What's really interesting is its northward range. So you can go all the way up the Connecticut River, and it's about 200 miles. We can go all the way up the Connecticut River, and for whatever reason that we have absolutely no clue, it stops at Agawam, Massachusetts. Why?
Here's a question for you. And David, you might be like, oh, this girl, she clearly doesn't know science. I'm curious.
That's why I'm here, Melissa.
Right? This is why we talked to you. I'm curious, though. Could we just put salt in the Connecticut River? Like, if this is clogging things up and it's causing a huge problem, can we just put salt in the river? Or is that, like,
yeah.
awful?
So here's the thing. The thing is that whenever we have invasive species,
yeah.
a lot of times we try to come up with some way to attack this invasive species.
Right.
And unfortunately, there are always unintended consequences. So remember,
yeah.
the Connecticut River is a freshwater river. It also has a little estuary where salt water with a Long Island Sound mixes. So there's already an ecosystem there that has evolved to live in that kind of water. So if we start
adding stuff,
and
you're
adding
now
salt,
mess up a
then
bunch
we're
of
you know we're going to actually start harming some of the plants and animals that rely on.
But it sounds like if you try to destroy this plant, it just it almost gets bigger.
Welcome to the problem of attacking species. Yes.
I mean, that's like a huge issue.
Yes, yes. And the thing that's worse, though, I mean, there are real economic costs. You know, just the Connecticut River alone adds about $1 billion a year to the Connecticut economy. You know, property taxes. There are people that are concerned about.
Sure.
I have waterfront property, and my waterfront property is clogged up with this new Frankenstein strain of hydrilla. Boating has been affected too. So, like, the people love fishing on the Connecticut River and some of the bays and estuaries. And
yeah.
that kind of thing. You know, so this, you know, I've actually seen pictures where people are pulling up their motorboats and clogging the propeller. Is all this hydrilla that they have to like pull
oh
up?
Oh my gosh! And if you don't
get all of it, and then you just put your boat on your trailer, and then take your boat to someplace else that has clear water, duh, because you want to be boating, you've just introduced this new Frankenstein strain of hydrilla to a whole new body of water. So now we're concerned. So this is kind of what happens. I mean, the world has gotten so much smaller, and species of different types of plants and animals and even birds have found new niches in places that they never had lived before. And so, you know, zebra mussels and, this hydrilla, and now this new strain of hydrilla that for whatever reason, we've only found it here in Connecticut. And so this is...
Great.
So, yeah, I know, yeah.
So much to be thankful for.
Yes,
oh, my Lanta.
Yes, this is our contribution to the world, Melissa.
Well, you know, it's too late to say it, but thanks, but no thanks. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, hopefully we find a solution, though. That is a very tricky situation. But thank you for bringing this to my attention, David. I had no idea.
Yeah, so if you're a boater, you know, just keep an eye on your boats and propellers and make sure that you do whatever it takes to kind of keep it from spreading. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, what a disaster. Well, David, thank you for sharing this. Really interesting stuff for Science You May Not Know. I hope you have a very happy Thanksgiving, and we will talk after the holiday.
Yeah. Maybe we'll find a way to include this in just Connecticut's version of Thanksgiving meal.
Yes, I love that. Oh, yes, I think that's a great idea. If we could just figure that one out, that
pumpkin
would be
delightful. Pumpkin pie and turkey and hydrilla.
Oh, yeah, not the best combo. But, yeah, I see what you're saying. David Mestre, thank you so much. Enjoy your holiday. We'll talk next week.
Take care.